back to sit.
Never mind that.
Why, that's me! Look at me! I'm an old man!
I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing here on the parking lot at...
Thank God I still got my hair! October 26th. What on earth is this thing I'm wearing?
Wow, this is a radiation suit.
Radiation suit? Of course. Because I want to fall out from the atomic force. This is truly amazing. A portable television studio. No wonder your president has to be an actor. He's got to look good on television.
Whoa, this is it. This is the part coming up, Doc.
No. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
What did I just say?
The flux capacitor stores... This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts! Great Scott! What the hell is a gigawatt? How could I have been so careless? 1.21 gigawatts! Tom, how am I going to generate that kind of power? It can't be done, can it?
Look, all we need is a little plutonium.
Oh, I'm sure that in 1985, plutonium was available in every corner drugstore, but in 1955, it's a little hard to come by. Marty, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you're stuck here.
Oh, God, stuck here. I can't be stuck here. I got a wife in 1985. I got a girl.
Is she pretty?
Oh, she's beautiful. She's crazy about me. Look at this. Look what you wrote here, Doc. I mean... That says it all. Doc, you're my only hope.
Marty, I'm sorry, but the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where it's ever going to strike.
We do now.
This is it. This is the answer. It says here that a bolt of lightning is going to strike the clock tower precisely 10:04 p.m. next Saturday night. If we could somehow harness this lightning, channel it into the flux capacitor, it just might work. Next Saturday night, we're sending you back to the future.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission. To explore strange new worlds. To seek out new life and new civilizations. To boldly go where no man has gone before.
It's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up, and the stock park it down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. Grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those windmill boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. Came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you. God's name is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
It's Old Shaziz here. Hope you're all doing well out there. Posted a couple links up in the chat room. One of them is a link to Robert Murray Smith's build guide for supercapacitors. It's worth taking a look at. Posted the other two links in there. One is from rimstar.org, I believe, and the other one, no, one's from Laser Hacker, and the other one's from Slider. There's a lot of people out there doing a lot of research into supercapacitors using graphene technology and such, and they're getting some really amazing results as far as power-wise and the speed of which that the supercapacitors will actually charge up. Now, see, that's one of the things that I think moving forward is worth looking into, because if you have some capacitors that can charge and discharge rapidly, or charge and hold charge even longer, the longer the better. But it was Laser Hacker, I believe, did a video quite some time back where he literally built a supercapacitor bank and was starting up a car with it. Instead of having a regular automotive battery in there, he actually built him a little power pack that was using nothing but supercapacitors. I believe they call them boost caps. You can Google that up and look out there and check them out on eBay. They're pretty expensive from what I understand, but they are really, really good capacitors. And So with that said, jump over there to shazizradio.com/superchat.html and check out those links there for the those couple videos. If you like their work over there, subscribe to their channel. Also, look up Robert Murray Smith. He's one pretty much leading the pack in the graphene technology and printable ink. Basically, he's made circuits and stuff like that using print technology and ink that was conductive. He's done some pretty amazing work. And so, you know, with that said, check out his work, check out Slider and Laser Hacker, Laser Saber, doggone it, can't remember which one's which. It's actually a couple of them out there. Rimstar.org, he also does some pretty cool projects as well. But if you get out there on YouTube, you'll find all kinds of different researchers out there in alternative energy community that do some pretty amazing stuff. And I keep saying this, I don't know what more to do. Try to get all these people together at the table to actually start putting together a device in the storage department. We got all the technology we need to literally build some pretty amazing battery hybrid capacitor technology. There's actually some batteries out there that have built-in capacitors to them, so they'll pack one heck of a punch. But Laser Saber was talking about, I'm gonna have to look because I keep saying that. I'm gonna click on this link right here. It's gonna start probably playing a commercial right live on the air. I'll try to pause it quickly so it don't happen, but also might be having just a little bit of technical difficulties off and on. I hope not. The internet service providers these days aren't seeming to be doing their job too well. Made many a calls, got a faster modem, and so on and so forth. It's getting ready to pop an ad up on me. So let me see if I can get, yeah, I stopped it just in the nick of time. I hate continuously misquoting somebody's name. Yeah, it was Laser Saber. Sorry about that. Anyway, go over and check out his YouTube channel. See some of the work he's been doing, and Rimstar.org, and Slider. Can't remember which numbers were behind there. There were some numbers behind there. Just click on that YouTube video there, you'll find them. Anyway, there's a lot of links out here in the Shaziz Radio website that send you to a lot of people's different YouTubes and networks and stuff. See, the gizmo that I put in one of my last videos there, which I'll have to look back up over there and see which video that was. I think it was X13 Fun. Anyway, basically took an air blower. It was a weed eater mulcher, and I used it backwards to be a blower motor for a squirrel cage fan, which was in turn turning the X13. And the reason why I wanted to do it that way was because step by step through this project, I want to make sure that nothing can couple back with the like the prime mover itself was just the airflow coming off of that blower motor. And as long as there is no way for that when the generator head, which is the X13, to slow down, even if it comes to a complete stop, it won't affect how much air pressure is actually coming out of that blower motor. So it won't affect the speed or the input voltage of the blower motor itself. So those two are not mechanically directly coupled with one another. So they won't affect, if it only takes 120 volts AC to run that blower motor, anywhere from 110 to 120, it's just depending. But if it only takes 120 volts AC to run the blower motor, then that's all you're going to have to worry about coming up with in order to keep that blower motor running at its top speed. And so that's why I wanted to use the blower motor instead of a direct coupling to the squirrel cage fan to turn that. Now, there's a lot of different ways, technologies you could use to actually nozzle the air better. And so, essentially, I built this with junk and hopefully to prove a point. But from that point on, we're now at the generator head. And we need to be able to move that energy away without invoking Lenz's law, which pretty much states that anytime you induce a current in a coil of wire, you create a second field that is an opposing field to the one that you created trying to move the energy from point A to point B. And so that's counterproductive to what we want to do there. You know, we want to be able to get the energy. We want that energy being generated in the X13 or generator head or whichever you want to use. But we don't want to invoke Lenz's law to move that, have that energy basically fighting against itself, slowing it down, acting like an electrical brake. So now we're going to take that energy, the high voltage energy, and we're going to do something that they did back in the late 1800s with the mercury arc rectifier. We're going to move that energy into a completely different state as opposed to the way that the standard use of electrical electricity is. So instead of having it the circuit directly connected to the load, we're going to change that energy to a completely different form and move it away from the generator head. We'll still have as much energy as we started with. It just will be a different form of energy. See, according to the conservation of energy, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. However, it can be changed. So we're going to change the frequency, the type of energy to a completely different state. Back in the late 1800s, they had what was known as a mercury arc rectifier that essentially was a glass tube that had a little pool of mercury down in the bottom. See, when Tesla won out with the AC current, then Edison already had some DC infrastructure in place, such as high voltage elevator motors. And so now he had to be able to figure out a way in which he could run the DC motors off of AC current, because that was becoming the standard. So they came up with the mercury arc rectifier, which essentially had a little pool of mercury inside a glass tube, and when you put your high voltage AC to it, it would create pretty much a dead short and start heating up that mercury. Eventually would vaporize the mercury into gas, and then while the gas is up inside the tube and the high voltage is still coming in, then you would have the gas changed into the plasma state. Now with plasma, you got a lot of benefits going on there that I was pretty sure that they didn't recognize back in the day, but maybe they did, who knows. Anyway, now that it's in the plasma state, it builds up pressure inside that tube. Voltage is pressure, and so whenever you're pumping that high voltage AC in that tube is pressurizing, it pretty much allows the electrons to only be able to flow in one direction. So now it's not like a direct dead short towards the back towards the generator head. So I imagine whenever they very first started up that mercury arc rectifier and the voltage came in, at first it might have bogged the generator down. Lenz's law would have been like full in play. It would have been a dead short because mercury's liquid metal. And so those electrons could have made a direct path right back into the generator. So for the instance that they first turned it on, it would bog down substantially, but the more that mercury got thinner and vaporized and gets to the final stage where no electricity or no electrons can literally flow back in the other direction because it's completely changed to a different state of matter, then that generator wouldn't have to work hard in order to maintain that plasma up to that point. And so you pretty much see this with your fluorescent bulbs, the way that they work. They actually have a tungsten element down in the end of it, and the only thing that the tungsten element in the end of those fluorescent bulbs is for heating up the gas inside there. and getting it ready to energize. But once the once it's in the plasma state, plasma generates heat inside there. And you can test that theory out by playing around with a plasma ball. You'll see that you hold your finger onto that glass, you'll notice that your finger starts getting a little warm there. And if you actually put a piece of metal or something, like aluminum foil or a penny on the outside of that, you can actually feel the energy pass through the glass to that penny. Actually, there's a guy out there on YouTube that's taking fluorescent bulbs and turning them into variable capacitors by wrapping some aluminum tape around them, and by the distance that he puts in between each one of the aluminum tapes changes the capacitance to some extent, using the gas itself as a dielectric in there, not the gas, the glass, as a dielectric in between the two plates. And I actually showed that in one of my videos. I can't remember the name of that one either, but I showed that you could actually use that connected right straight into a bridge rectifier to charge batteries up with DC motors. So that tells me that that energy can be transferred through the plasma. It's been done before. It's not a new concept. It was all the way back in the late 1800s when they had the mercury arc rectifier. Essentially, that was the first plasma reactor. And what I like about the plasma technology is the fact that, you know, you have variable capacitors out there. You have variacs and potentiometers and such that you can use to adjust, you know, speed up and slow down or allow more voltage or less to come through there. So what they were doing back in there, back in the day, wasn't much in much less than what I'm talking about doing at this point. I'm going to try to add a couple people into the call here. Let me see if I can get Justin in here first. He's getting impatient. All right, how's it going, brother? You're live on there. You got your microphone going there? No? Yeah? No?
How's it going?
Pretty good. What's that crystalline structure that I see in your picture there? Hello?
You're breaking up bad, she says.
All right, well, what's that crystalline structure that you have on your picture there?
Oh, that's bismuth.
Ah, cool.
Yeah, board bismuth.
All right, well, did you listen in on anything I was talking about there about the supercapacitors? No.
Okay.
Rectifier. They were taking the high voltage AC, turning it into high voltage DC, and being able to run the elevator motors. That was the whole deal there. Let's try this call again with Justin. I may have to kill this doggone chat room here because the two's fighting over resources. Do-do-do-do-do. No answer. All right, let's try this again. So now, do you got the volume going on there now? Going once? Going twice? Are you there?
Yeah, I can hear you, Sis.
Oh, well, that's good. Okay, we're live on air.
Where are you cut in? No.
All right, we're live on air. Anyway, basically, to fill you in since you weren't listening, back to the generator head. When you take the energy away from that generator head and you're not creating a dead short, a return path for the electrons, then you don't invoke Lenz's law. And so you won't have the back EMF problem that you would be before. I'm going to try a quick music break. Sorry, folks. You're listening to Mad Science, and this podcast is getting destroyed by craziness. All right. Let me see if I can find something there. I need that 5-minute deal. Yeah, we'll try this for a second. everybody. You're listening to Mad Science. Apologize for all the technical difficulties going on over there. They want to try to save on bandwidth, so they're cutting people short here and there. So that's what's going on out there in the internet world. And a lot of people are being affected by it. It's aggravating, but that's the way it goes. So with that said, and I can't see the chat room because I had to shut down a few things in order so that there ain't so many requests going on out there. But other people out there can still see in the chat room. So if you're over there at ShazizRadio.com, you can still talk with each other. I apologize for that. So, with that said, we were talking about the Mercury Arc rectifier and how it functioned as a diode, or, basically to change high voltage AC into high voltage DC. And we were talking about supercapacitors. There are some really good links over there on Shaziz Radio superchat.html that's under a load, even when the load gets so substantial that it literally brings the generator head to a complete stop. It will not affect the prime mover, which is the blower motor in the process. And so from the generator head moving on forward, taking the energy away from the generator and moving it into the plasma state, now we will have no direct coupling back to the generator head. Then taking that energy off from the plasma state and moving it out via, whether you want to do it via heat or whether you want to do it via high voltage, either way, then at the very least, you would reduce Lenz's effect to a substantial amount where the generator head wouldn't even be remotely slowed down. So, you got any thoughts on that there, Justin? No? Yeah? Going once? Going twice? That's terrible for radio, man.
I'm gonna have to try and listen on the show or something to so I can hear what you're saying, because you're in and out so much.
All right. Well, I'm probably just gonna.
That would be a 30-second delay.
So, did you hear any of that, Muddy? At all? No. Buddy.
Yeah, I'm here.
Did you hear him, CERN, that I'm talking about is the fact that the charge and the discharge rate are so good. See, now as far as danger-wise, you guys got to be careful. You don't want to learn electrical safety by accident. However, being able to move the energy away as I'm talking about, I hope you guys understand what it is that I'm saying about taking the energy off the generator head, changing it into the plasma state, and using that to move that energy away from the generator head so as not to invoke Lenz's law. Do you understand what I'm talking about there?
Vaguely I do. I'm not too up on your generator head, no.
Alright, look. Lenz's law, when you induce a current into a coil wire, it creates an opposing field. They call that back EMF. It basically starts to slow down the generator head because...
So that is free energy.
As long as you don't have that drag on there... At the very least, you make it a whole lot more efficient. You see what I'm saying?
Right. The back EMF is pretty much what causes that mechanical drag in your generator. So you take that back EMF away, or don't let it flow, and it's not going to drag on your generator.
Yeah, and that would... That would be
that what you get.
Yeah, that'd be beneficial for even the gasoline generator. Once you turn the light bulb on, Lenz's law only applies because now you're allowing electron flow right back into the same generator head that you're trying to get the power out of. So you're sending the air pressure back into air pressure, essentially. You see what I mean? And so if you get past that point and you're not invoking Lenz's law because you're moving the energy away from the deal, the energy's still going to flow. Once you turn that generator head, before you put it under load, that energy's looking for a place to go.
It's only in the...
Using the best of both kind of say thing there. What do you think?
Oh. Strange to take two people that have opposing views and use their technology. It kind of merges well anyway.
Yeah.
Thomas Edison, Nikola Tesla.
Well, both of them had their uses as far as energy wise, you know, and so, you know, DC batteries, we use a lot of DC in a lot of different things that you wouldn't even think about, you know, but definitely in the auto industry, you know, because the battery, lead acid battery, can hold some charge pretty good. And so we know that when we use our solar, and impressive work on his stuff, and he's using the Samsung direct drive washing machine motors and the doggone it, something in Packle. the scroll
Fisher and Packle.
Fisher and Packle.
Fisher
yeah.
And Packle washing machines have smart drive motor in.
And
they've been making wind turbines. They're pretty much a wind turbine package right out of the box.
Yep, right off the store shelf. Those things are really impressive. And the thing about it is, just like that video that I did on the hard drive motor, if you bring them things up to some really serious RPMs, you'll continually raise the voltage up on that. And that's all I care about at this point. I don't care about all the rest. I'll have to do a video on the one that I got here and show you how powerful that is. I'm lighting up a 150-watt light bulb just by turning it with my hand. Now,
yeah.
Keep in mind, when I'm doing this, you can feel the back EMF. You can feel Lenz's effect. Because, you know, it's a direct, simply with that 150-watt light bulb, it's a direct short back to the doggone generator head. And so, what I need to do is to take that that same generator head and not put it under a direct load and spin it up to some higher RPMs to raise the voltage up. See, I don't want that direct load right out of the gate. What I want is that high voltage to energize the gas into a plasma state so I can take that energy and move it rapidly. You see where I'm coming from?
Yep. So you're taking it off the back EMF?
Not taking any back EMF. I'm not wanting to create any. I'm not invoking Lenz's law at all. All I'm doing is taking the energy inside that tube. It's only wanting to go one direction.
Right.
Yeah.
Those smart drive motors. You look at those things. I think they're pretty cool. But they do the same thing, just like you lighten that light bulb by cranking.
Yeah.
You don't have to crank it as hard as them ceiling fan motors. They're built the same way with the magnets on the outside and everything.
Yep.
And well, I know you put a light bulb on that ceiling fan, I got to crank it fast because it don't get to the voltage as easy.
If you look...
But, I know when I put that light bulb on there, it sure gets a little hard to crank.
If you look in the inside the hard drive motors, they look identical as far as the way the stator is designed as the direct drive motors. And they pretty much run the same way. They have Hall effect sensors in there that pulse the coils. But while Raymond was out here with the X13, the generator bogged down substantially. So that's what I'm talking about. And using the capacitor technology like Robert Murray Smith and all them are working on, now you have a way to take that energy from the plasma state back into usable current again. So you charge up the capacitors rapidly, you spill those capacitors down over into battery banks, and then you run your inverters, and there you go. Any ideas? This doggone internet's going to drive me
drinking.
Not right off,
no. No, I heard everything you said. Don't worry about that. And I believe I can get all that straightened out anyway.
And then go from that to, let's say, a fluorescent bulb, and you'll notice a significant decrease at that point. Then when you go all the way down to LEDs, which only rely on basically electron flow, they don't require a lot of current. Matter of fact, a lot of current burn them up. And so when you get down to LED technology, it's really easy to turn. So essentially, that's what we're doing. We're taking that from a direct short all the way down to a minuscule short, you know, where it's not even substantial enough to even remotely slow down the generator head. And we're moving that energy away from the generator head to a completely different state of energy, so that that you're not invoking Lenz's law and not having the back EMF. And it's the easiest way to do it. So what do you think? Do-do-do-do-do. This is terrible for radio. All right. Ending call.
Yeah, why don't I string out the coffee cans?
Yeah, you string out the coffee cans, and we'll try that. All righty. Well, once we get all these coffee cans strung out with the strings in between there, and maybe we'll get something situated. Everybody's having a hassle. Anyway, so now that we've completely destroyed the radio show and the podcast therein, which I'll be uploading after so the folks that missed out on the Mad Science Show can actually hear it, let me try to start off and re-explain this. I don't understand. Well, alrighty, well, here we go again. Can you hear me now?
Why did the call? Yeah, I can hear you.
All right, great.
Breaking up pretty bad. I don't know what the deal is. See, we get on brain food talk for hours, and we haven't had any problems. So it's only during the shows.
Yeah, well, capacitor technology out there is amazing. Robert Murray Smith is pretty much leading the way as far as I'm concerned, as far as the printable inks and the... Yeah, he's doing some really awesome work, and actually working on a really powerful supercapacitor, which I'm anxious to see how that's coming along. But the capacitor technology that we've got already is good enough. Even some of the older capacitors good enough to do what it is that I'm saying. All I want that capacitor for is basically a storage. That's it. I want to be able to move the energy away from the generator head as rapidly as possible, store capacitors up, and then be able to drain that energy off and use it on demand right through a battery bank. That's the plan. So, what do you think?
Oh, yeah, I think that's great. You ever make them capacitors when you were a kid?
No, but I made a lot of capacitors using aluminum.
Yeah.
Aluminum.
Shoot, we had a paper route when I was in high school. I used to take a whole newspaper and a whole roll of aluminum foil. And the aluminum foil isn't as wide as the new one. And I'd do about two or three rolls. Just to tighten things up. Then I'd go ahead and I'd do the same with the second one, and I'd lay them down side by side. And I'd roll, when I say do another one, another layer of newspaper, and then aluminum foil with another tab on it, and I'd have that come out the other end of the roll, so the wires wouldn't wind up touching. And I'd roll them things up, I'd keep on rolling and rolling and get them as tight as I possibly can so they're like a log. I'd roll them things up till they got darn near about an inch and a half thick. And when I was at the TV station, we had a bunch of old capacitors that seemed to leak and stuff, so in order to keep from wind up using them by accident in circuits, we'd stick them to the end of an extension cord, stick them in a trash can, and then go to the other end of them. We, after throwing a bunch of paper on top of the capacitor in the trash can and putting the lid on, we'd plug them in and blow the lid off and the paper would go everywhere. It was kind of fun.
That's just insane.
So, but, oh yeah, it's great. You got some capacitors that really aren't all that great. You don't want to mix them up. Just put them in the end of the extension cord. But put them in the trash can. It kind of muffles it. We were supposed to do this to make sure that, you know, they didn't just get into some of the circuits. So yeah, we had a ball. It was like the 4th of July inside the studio.
And he was working on one that I think it was like maybe a million volts that he said that thing would be able to store when it's done.
Yeah.
Either way, that's that's a lot of power.
Size of a credit card. He's got, look, a 1 farad capacitor back when I was going to Texas State Tech Institute would have been about the size of the classroom. 1 farad. Nowadays, we got these 1 farad capacitors in the size of a regular soda can, a taller soda can. And now we're looking at, that was a few years ago. Now, we've got 20 farads in those things on the store, and your regular audio stores. But the technology is so much farther. Robert Murray Smith's got a credit card size supercapacitor that is 20 meg farads.
That's quite impressive.
The size of a stupid credit card.
That's impressive. Imagine.
I know the voltage is very, the voltage is very high, but the current is there, and it's all done with that graphene. It's something else.
Well, that's why I keep talking about this, is because the doggone technology to do that. Could you imagine a battery about the size of a car battery, a capacitor built the way that Robert Murray Smith is doing it? And basically alternate back and forth across there for your positive and negative, that which ones would actually be touching. And fill that entire barrel up with aluminum and glass, and then some sort of oil. You know, non-toxic oil. What do you think of that?
You say glass or fiberglass?
Glass. Real thin panes of glass for the dielectric. So, basically...
Yeah, the thinner the better. And glass is real good about not letting too much spark go through. You get a pretty decent high voltage without going through the glass.
Yeah, and so basically...
Yeah.
You would make one heck of a storage bank, you know? And then as long as that capacitor was already attached to the load, then you can use it as a battery. You see what I mean? There's the difference. Whenever you have a fully charged capacitor and try to connect something to it, you get an instantaneous discharge of all the power that's inside that capacitor. But if it's already connected, then you don't have that problem. You see what I'm saying?
Yep. I tried to tell Boomer. He says he's got more mirrors than anybody in his town, even Black.
Anyway, you'll have to make a trip down here with him sometime.
Oh, yeah, we're planning on it. We're planning on it. So every time I plan on getting down that way, Murphy's Law decides to take over.
Yeah, Murphy's Law is a terrible thing, man. Somebody should have gave Murphy a one-way ticket to Mars or something.
Yeah, I'll find old Murphy one of these days. I'm going to slap him upside the back of the head so hard he'd be smiling out of his undershorts.
So. Anyway, you know, basically,
the two of us won't be smiling the same.
Basically, if I can get done what I want to do here pretty soon, I may be able to. I may be able to use Spectrum tubes. I'm gonna order a couple new Spectrum tubes and use those as a testing purpose for what it is that I'm talking about. Any of the noble gases that, you know, are non-combustible. I mean, you can make plasma with any gas. It doesn't matter. But it's really not recommended to use, like, say, hydrogen, because if one thing goes wrong, you get a little oxygen mixed in there with that, and you get a spark, and you can see where that's going to go. And since we're going to be creating plasma and pressure using high voltage, it's best to use one of the noble gases, inert gases, or whatever you want to call them, ones that aren't flammable, so to speak, there. So, that's why they use, like, halogen and neon and stuff in all these different bulbs out there that you see. It's not that you can't do it. And for obvious reasons, you don't want to use mercury. You know, there's a lot of mercury vapor bulbs out there, but you don't want to crack them open because that's really not good for you.
Right.
But, you know, when the very first plasma reactor was the mercury arc rectifier, and basically that's what it is. If my guess is right, it would do exactly what the mercury arc rectifier did back in the day.
Ain't gonna do it on one of my ham radio though. Yeah. Those things are rare. They're hard to find.
Well, just like the mercury.
They start off, they do a quick flash, and then they break up.
Have you ever seen Photo Induction's channel?
I'll tell you.
You
have I ever seen who?
Photo Induction, the guy that's always blowing stuff up with high voltage. He also lasered his wife's couch. He went around the house burning everything with a laser. And he said he was going to be in trouble when his wife got home.
No, I ain't seen that.
Well, anyway, somehow or another, over in his area, he was able to come up with a lot of cool stuff with high voltage. And he comes, I guess he works for an electric company or something over there where he's at. And he got access to a lot of high voltage equipment. So, it'd be nice to have an inside.
Yeah. That stuff that they uninstall, and he gets photon induction, gets to take it home.
Yeah.
That's a crazy guy.
Oh, I'm telling you.
First video I saw of him, he was putting, I forget, 20 million volts to a television. He blasted holes right through that thing. And yeah, it was great. It lit up nicely. I was rolling. My stomach was sore by the time I got done. I think I watched about 30 more of his videos by the time I had my total fix after that first one.
Yeah.
That's a crazy guy.
I'm always concerned for his safety because he's working with massive voltages.
I'm concerned for his landlord.
For his neighbors. If there's ever a blackout in his neighborhood, you'll know who did it.
Yeah, he must have three layers of carpet in that upstairs room. I'll tell you what. And a vent hood. He just, that's not good enough. And then take that over. If he can't blow it up, he'll hit it with that sledge.
Well, Russ from RWG Research, he's got a pretty massive capacitor bank over there that he was doing railgun stuff with. And, man, you could tell how much power that doggone thing had to it. You know, not only would it weld the rails, but it would also, you could watch them cables in the background every time he flipped that switch on that thing. Those cables would leap up into the air, man. There's a lot of...
already here. Somehow gravity also negated all the wind and air resistance as well. So, yeah, if you put that through a Cerelepex put the Sarlopec generator through some kind of a railgun, shoot, man, it might as well be out as far as Pluto before you know it. Huh. I think that's fun.
Well, I'd like to get a bunch of these guys together, man. All these different really good YouTube channels that have alternative energy research on there. What's the guy's name over? Doggone it! Dan, is that his name?
Dan Robo.
Yeah. He's got a lot of good ideas. I'd like to get him and you and all these different researchers out there together for a project, man.
Yeah, we used to spend hours yakking on the phone. For some reason, man, we planned on maybe 20, 30 minutes talking, and it always turned into hours. Exchange information. Dan's a fun, huh? Dan would be fun to have on the show.
Well,
he really would be.
Maybe you can talk to him and see if he wants to join us on the show sometime.
Yeah, why don't you let him promote a few of them Fresnel lenses and parabolic... he makes them parabolic lenses.
Yeah.
Right there in his oven at home. And
like I said, if we could get all these guys together, at least for one weekend, to do a project, I think it would come out really well, you know.
Oh.
And get you and Raymond down here as well, and get all these guys together, come together for a project, and you know, do a video on there and send it up to everybody's YouTube. So, you know,
that'd be pretty cool. My next project. A little bit out of the way and not really into the electrics. I'm starting to get into geodesic domes. And, if you got 25 lengths of anything and 11 hubs, you can make a geodesic dome in less than an hour. And if you can cover it with Tyvek or whatever, then you've got a building. And it shouldn't take you no more than an hour. But my deal is I want to stretch something that's porous and kind of probably just dust it with that cement and keep wetting it down just a little bit. And, yeah, well, I'll have me a cement geodesic dome in a matter of hours. So within 24 hours you go inside and you got a pure concrete shell on the outside of it. I think that'd be awesome. I'm also to make a bone crete mixer for the cheapest dollar there is. There's one out there that makes 10 gallons a minute, and you put your Portland or your crete in dust form into the hopper. You hook up air from your compressor, and it needs about 4 to 6 CFM, and you also need your water from your hose hooked up on another outlet, and it's got a kind of like a worm gear deal there, kind of pushes it down this piece of PVC tubing and then some blades that beat the living fire out of it. And pretty much that's the cheapest deal there, but they got a deal, they want to charge you $200 to $300 for the plans and the thing there, and they said, and just and a list of parts that should cost you another $200. To me, it says $500. And they're claiming that they just want to make it where everybody can make it. What I'm looking at is they're getting 8 times your brick compared to the amount of Portland that you're using.
That sounds amazing. Be a good deal to try to build a dome with.
Well, hey, I'd have a shop here at my house and save myself $75 a month. I could walk out my door and be in my shop. It doesn't cost me much. Now, Boomer brought me down a bunch of 2x4, so I'm fixing to make a good acid dome anyway. I should have 1,300 square feet, just by where I got. Then the deal is to either Tyvek or whatever, and I can cover that thing. But it's a 1V dome. A 1V dome means you have one length of struts, as they call them, which mine would be 2x4, so one length of struts. A 2V would mean two lengths. A 3V would be, you know, three lengths, and they go all the way up to like 6V. And have all the geometrics, and that's when you get into a lot of pieces. And they're shorter pieces. But you can build some very huge domes and stuff. You can build them on anywhere out of 2x4, you can build them out of 2x2s, you can build them out of PV. And not bad for a mud-up, redneck build and stuff. But I'm going to do it with the plastic lids first, then maybe I'll even go ahead and take me some rebar and make me some corners and everything for that, and just reinforce everything when I'm done.
Well, you could cut you some circles out in some 3/4-inch plywood or whatever width you need, some sort of wood. Cut you some circles out and use some spade bits to drill you some holes to plug your rebar or your PVC in.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of options.
They got one company out there for $86. They call it Quick Dome, star plates. That's what they call them. You can get 11 of those for $86, and I also found another company making them, but they're not as strong. With the star plates, you can have a 10,000 pound roof capacity, which is awesome. The other company, they're a lot thinner, but their pressed down look pretty much the same. They're saying like 400 and 500 pounds. So, but you know, hey, if you're not going to put 400 and 500 pounds up on your roof, or you aren't expecting a bunch of snow to stick and stay up there, then that's good enough.
There are people out there that actually build them houses. They got balloons they bring out, and then they put all the rebar and stuff around it, and then they turn around and concrete in. End up making concrete domes.
Yeah, the military's got a deal there where they take a whole building out. It's all on one pallet. And they move it out with a forklift. They put it out there on another, they stretch out another bottom piece of material to pull it out on. And once they drop that pallet out there, they hook on to, they hook a chain off to a ring at one end, and they take the vehicle. And they pull it out until it's all stretched out, and then they start putting the air to it. And this this canvas is right at about 1/4-inch thick, and that's why it's impregnated with the cement or concrete. And I mean, that's why they bring it out there on the pallet with the forklift and drop it. There's another deal, the papercrete. Papercrete. Take 60 pounds of newspaper and like an 80-pound bag of Portland, and you take that newspaper, you just start shredding it up, and you start putting water in your deal there, and you can take the rear end. You've seen these trailers made out of a pickup bed, right?
Yeah.
And you've seen them big round. You've seen them big round watering troughs that they use.
Yeah.
The little tin or steel watering troughs are usually galvanized, which makes me kind of furious. Why are they going to sit there and put water in a galvanized deal and let your cattle drink out of it? That's like poison, I'm concerned. But this is a better use for the trough. They put it on top of there, and they aim the yoke, which is the pumpkin or the transaxle at the end. They turn the yoke that normally connect to the drive shaft. They turn that straight up, and they lower the springs, and they put the middle of that trough right through. They put that yoke right through the middle of that watering thing, and they put a big lawnmower blade on it. And you're still hooked up as a trailer, so you put the water in there. You got your seal, and you tore all your newspaper into strips, and they put the bag of Portland in there. And you drive around the block for like 3 or 4 miles per hour. You drive around the block and you come back, and it's got air whipped in it and everything. And that's very thermal, and it's bulletproof, unless you're getting one of them 50 caliber suckers. But it'll stop all the rest of the bullets. It's flame proof as well. What they do on back into that is they take like a piece of inner tube, and they connect it to the back of it, and a little door that shuts off the flow inside, another sliding piece of metal, and they tie off the end of the inner tube when they're not pouring. I control it as you're pulling over really slowly, and they pour all these bricks, and one guy's coming behind with a trowel to even them all off. And you let them sit out there for like 3 to 4 hours, then you can take the boards off the side and the ones out of the middle. And it takes about 5 days to fully harden. And then when you're done with that, these things are super light as well, super thermal. And you can start building with those. And they're very cheap, very cheap. Because of the air mixed in there and also the all that paper, making it thermal, the size of it, of course the paper's going to swell as well. And instead of getting bricks that you would normally get out of like a 90-pound bag of Portland, you're getting like 7 to 8 times. And these blocks, as well as the foamcrete, will, if you throw them in the swimming pool, they will float. So yeah, that's how light they are. Very easy to build with.
So. Alrighty, well, you know. I
pretty much finished up my tower. I've got 2 more pieces of rebar welded up on it, and then we're going to hit it with some hydrochloric acid and just let it heat the rust right off there and give it a rinse. And it's time to paint, put it up on the shop, and I'm back into the green energy all over again. A little bit of wiring left to do and catch it up on everything else, lawn mowing. I'm filling my front tires and my zero turn with that spray foam. Great stuff, big gap filler, so I'll have no more flats. So that's pretty much got everything wrapped up over here at what I'm doing.
Well, what do you say we take a quick music break and refresh our coffee and come back and polish off the show?
Alrighty.
Yeah.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Hello, everybody. We're back. You're listening to Mad Science. Got Muddy on here and Justin on here, and we've had a few technical difficulties, but we'll have the podcast up, and it should be straight through, so you won't have to listen to all the craziness going on. Anyway, we'll get that sorted out and figure out what the heck is going on there. And basically, maybe we'll be able to do a decent show again. Anyway, so today, a lot of links. Check out Muddy Muddy Mudman's YouTube channel for actual flux wind turbines and how to carve a prop and all kinds of other goodies on there. So with that said, there's to recap the whole deal. We talked about the supercapacitors. We talked about the how to try to get around invoking Lenz's law by using the plasma. Basically, starting from your prime mover, if you can keep your prime mover from your generator head coupling back to the prime mover and slowing it down, then you can make that efficient. So basically, using the blower motor to blow wind, no matter what happens with the generator, even if the generator comes to a dead stop, the blower motor will still only drain the amount that it takes to run that blower motor. It's still going to put out the same amount of air pressure. Yeah, I got an echo. Echo, that's always good for radio.
Echo. Happy birthday, young fart.
Yeah, I went out and bought me a little mini hot rod for my birthday.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad. You hadn't been
Yeah. We're a lot better than Facebook. Anyway, so thank you for all the birthday wishes and loves everybody sent to me and all that kind of stuff. And now that I'm an old fart, like Muddy said, I do have a little mini hot rod now, so I'll try to stay out of trouble. Anyway.
Well, I got one question.
Yeah.
What fell off this year?
I don't know, maybe some more hair or something like that. Anyway.
That's okay. Hey. I was having great yet. You're all right.
Yep. So I'm having my midlife crisis with my little mini hot rod. And
Again?
Huh? Again?
Yeah, you need another one of the mini hot rod bounces.
Yeah, well, I got one of those.
Yeah.
But, anyway, to polish this off here, the whole concept of what I'm talking about and the reason why I'm interested in plasma and high voltage is to literally move the energy rapidly, all right, and move it in such a manner that it doesn't invoke Lenz's law and slow down your generator head. And so from start to finish, designing a generator system that will be 100% efficient and potentially then some. Your appliances can run. That's what I'm working on. And if anybody out there is interested in that concept and that project, then contact me on Skype or YouTube or Facebook or down here in the chat room at ShazizRadio.com. And we'll work it out. And I'd love to have all these other researchers out there that are doing things like graphene technology and all this kind of stuff, because these are all the pieces of the puzzle. This is what we need to bring all these people together. You know, the dream team. That's what I keep hollering about. If we can get these people to the table in the, underneath the same shop, no matter where the shop is, get everybody under the same shop, we can get this done and stop talking about it. I want free energy for the world, and before I die, I'm going to at least show everybody how I'm going to do it. So, you know, now hopefully that'll benefit the world. So with that said, Muddy, you got anything last to say there? No? Going once, going twice, coming to the microphone? Buddy!
Oh, yeah, I guess that helps. Bang! Yeah, there we go. Yeah, I think I've pretty much said everything there, old great ancient one, you. We get up there. I'll probably bring as many presents as I can when I head up that way. I think that underground lab you got over there, I think you probably call that virtual.
Up there that has an older system that doesn't need to be updated. It's working fine. But then you'll go on the websites and they'll say, we no longer support your old software and stuff like that. So, you know, we're on...
Because your old software is too private.
Yeah, we're on a time time limit here, you know, and so we need to get all this stuff together before my stuff is so out of date I can't even talk to anybody or, you know, get something situated that's newer and updated. You know, that's the thing, you know. Basically, technology as far as computer-wise is scooting right along, but as far as free energy-wise, you know, they're suppressing it. They're leaving us in the dust because, you know, if we can't talk to each other and share our ideas, then, you know, how are we going to get anything done? That's why we need to get everybody to the table, get the work done, build a doggone alternative energy device that people can use out there, and at the very least come out of there with something that is so efficient that it's worthy of moving forward with. Would you agree? Cruddy internet service. We went from Central Link to Honest Abe's used ISP.
I think you need to call them up. You need to call them up like I did. Tell me, said, look, the internet is paid by what I do on the internet, and what I do on the internet can't be all garbled up. So
yeah,
get it straight.
I try not to be rude with folks, but I guess I might have to kind of set my foot down a little bit and get something situated. All right, well, this ought to make for a good podcast with all the cutting in and out and stuff, so we'll just have to see how it works. But I learned a trick here with Sam. If you're ever out there and you're broadcasting and you're having problems, just keep the show rolling. Don't stop the Sam, and you'll get a decent podcast out of it. So hopefully you guys out there can get to hear the podcast without all the interruptions. So with that said, peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to Mad Science.
Put it in the editing room.
Yeah, but you know how long it takes me to edit?
Oh, come on, man. It's only a couple thousand spaces.
Yep.
To delete.
All right, everybody. Peace and love. Take care. You've been listening to Mad Science.
Aw, crap.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.